I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. This is Fronteras, a program about issues along the U.S.-Mexico border and changing demographics in the Southwest. Beginning with the arrival of Columbus in 1492, the Spanish dominated centuries of history in the New World. Their dominance in what we know now as the American Southwest began to decline in the 19th century when Mexico and Texas fought for independence. What the Spanish left behind in history was hundreds of years of print culture. They were meticulous with their record keeping. But with the battle for Texas independence in 1836, Spanish print culture in America came to an abrupt end. Centuries of decrees handed down by a divine ruler gradually evolved, and individuals with revolutionary tendencies were sure to borrow their language and use it in such a way to win support to start a new form of government. Bernardo Gutierrez de Lara was one such individual. He supported independence from Spain, specifically for the province of Texas. In 1812, Bernardo employed the emerging printing press to distribute a broadsheet known as the Jesus, Maria, y José document, which called Tejanos to, quote, shake off the barbarous and offensive yoke of centuries of despotism. And it worked. 23 years before the Alamo, Bernardo and his army entered San Antonio de Béjar, the Spanish governor surrendered, and Texas declared independence. It was a momentous period in Texas history, even though independence didn't last but a few months. But why isn't this important era in Texas history written about as often as the events that unfolded at the Alamo in 1836? Raul Coronado is an associate professor of ethnic studies at the University of California, Berkeley. In his book, A World Not to Come, he meticulously details the language and philosophies during the four times Texas changed sovereignty in the 19th century, first as a Spanish colony, to a Mexican republic, to a Texan republic, to the 28th state in the United States of America. Coronado explains why it was important to understand how language was used at the time to spur transformation.
So the 1836 war, I know this is really like was almost sacred in Texas history, but that war has to be seen in the context of what was unfolding in Mexico, throughout Mexico as well. They were all fighting authoritarian government. So the Texas Revolt was part of a much larger national wave within Mexico of wanting to gain more authority or more independence from authoritative government. So that's the way the Texas Revolt should be seen of 1836. But to talk about the Wars of Independence, then that would take us back to 1811, 1812, 1813, when Texas was still a Spanish colony, part of New Spain. And it was the first Spanish colony in the entire Americas to declare itself independent as a republic. So even when Mexico declares itself independent in 1821, it will do so as a kind of constitutional monarchy. So Texas was pretty unique and kind of out there, but it's not studied at all. And it's not studied because the revolution, the War of Independence at that point, ultimately failed. That is, they gained independence. They were able to come into Texas. The revolutionaries had come in from Louisiana. It was a combination of Tejanos, Europeans, other Latin Americans, Anglo-Americans coming in. That independence was short-lived, but it didn't last long, and that's why it's not studied.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because obviously the history is there, but it's overshadowed. And one of the key figures in this particular part of history was Bernardo Gutierrez de Lara. He was the one who sort of made that call for independence back in the day. And as you mentioned, he was defeated shortly thereafter. But there was a long road that Bernardo had up until he led that army into Texas. So can you go back and tell us how Spanish print culture sort of helped Bernardo develop what it is that he knew he needed to tell the people in Texas, you need to be with me and not with Spain?
So I became interested in the documents that were circulating in public that were handwritten or printed and published and meant to be circulated with a larger audience. And I quickly found out that this is a very polemical field, Texas history, no surprise there. It's very, very contested. And so when we think about Texas history, the key figures and key moments are the Texas Revolt of 1836, James Bowie, Davy Crockett. And those are important figures for sure. And that is seen in history as the birth of democracy, the arrival of democracy, of self-determination, and that it comes with 1836. But as I started doing my research, I became curious, well, what about the Tejanos who lived there? Texas had, before 1836, had been part of Mexico. Well, before it was part of Mexico, it was actually a Spanish colony. What happened to Tejanos who lived during those various transformations of the nation state? So there was a whole generation, for example, the San Antonio native, Jose Antonio Navarro. He lived through all these various transformations of nation states, from a Spanish colony to a Mexican Republic to the Texas Republic, and then part of the United States. Four different nation states, a whole generation of Tejanos lived through that. And no one had studied, like, what did they think? What did they want? What did they advocate for? And they've, in history, had always been seen as sort of the backdrop or had been seen as victims. So for me, let's focus on how Tejanos debated and discussed these ideas in public with one another. So I looked at newspapers. I looked at, became interested in when the printing press arrives there. And all of a sudden, this other world emerges. And it was really with Bernardo Gutierrez Solara, who was from South Texas, from the Rio Grande Valley. He and his brother, as it turns out, were fascinating figures. Many parts of New Spain were actively wanting to gain more autonomy from Spain. So they're not quite clear yet whether they want to become an independent nation, still part of the larger Hispanic monarchy. So for some of them, they wanted to be part of that monarchy, but they wanted more of a what we might describe as a republic, a federation of different kingdoms. So I became interested in, like, well, how do they debate these ideas? How do they know? When did they decide to shift from a monarchy to a constitutional monarchy to a kind of republic to a democracy? Miguel Hidalgo, when he declares the Grito de Dolores Hidalgo, is chased by the Spanish forces north. And he is trying desperately to make his way to the U.S. because he thinks that the Americans will provide support for the revolutionaries in Mexico. Hidalgo is captured just before he crosses into Texas. But even before he's captured, he's able to deputize Bernardo Gutierrez Lara. And he authorizes him to go to the U.S. to gain support from the U.S. to come back with military support to fight the Spanish forces. He kept a diary with him. He traveled from South Texas all the way through the coast, all the way to East Texas, along the Camino Real and into Louisiana. And he is probably one of the first Spanish Americans to really travel from Louisiana through the South up into Tennessee, Kentucky, and then on over into Virginia, and then makes his way to Washington, D.C. He kept his diary, but I found the original diary at the Texas State Archives. It's like fascinating. It's like, you know, you're searching for a needle in a haystack. And when you find something like this, it's so rewarding and it inspires you to do more research. So in that diary, he writes about everything he sees, what he witnesses, what he wishes. It's a political transformation. The voyage is a political transformation. So when he makes his way to D.C., there are other revolutionaries from throughout Spanish America that have made their way there as well.
And I have to interrupt here because is a piece of American history we don't learn about. There were people from Spanish America making their way up to what was then the United States and befriending many of the founding fathers. I don't remember if it was Bernardo who became friends with Thomas Jefferson, but apparently Thomas Jefferson had a lot of friends who were Spanish Americans.
Yeah. Right. No, it wasn't with Bernardo Gutierrez de Lara, but no, it was with Francisco de Miranda, a revolutionary who had fought in the American Revolutionary Wars in Florida and in the South. So there were many Spanish American figures who had traveled to the East Coast and had met many famous American politicians. Gutierrez de Lara arrives in D.C., and he is now all of a sudden immersed in this world, meets these other revolutionary Spanish Americans. That period of his stay in D.C. in his diary is missing. And it's not that he didn't write about them. There are pages that are missing in his diary. Either he tore them out, someone tore them out, they're just missing. They're not there. We don't know who he met, but we do know if we look at the history of printed documents, again, looking at print culture, we do know that right when he arrives in D.C., 1811, 1812, all these other Spanish language documents are being printed also in D.C. If they're printing Spanish documents, we can easily infer that he readily had access to whoever was printing them, and he was reading those documents as well. So he begins his political education there. He meets Jose Alvarez de Toledo, a Cuban, who is a shady figure. He will go back and forth between being loyal to the revolutionaries and then going back and working for the Spanish royal forces. And he's a really shady figure in Texas as well. So they agree that Gutierrez Lara will return to Texas and to East Texas and to Nacogdoches. Bernardo Gutierrez Lara, when he arrives in East Texas, he writes that he has gone to the printing house to see the printing of these documents that will be circulated into Texas. The Spanish commanders are trying desperately to prevent these documents from coming in, but they're unable to do so. 6 months after those documents were being printed, they make their ways into the Tejano towns of East Texas and then into San Antonio. Bernardo Gutierrez Lara comes in, and many of the soldiers join Gutierrez Lara's forces. They make their way into San Antonio, and they easily take San Antonio from the Spanish governor. It's powerful to see this, the power that these documents had. So as a person who is trained in the humanities, who is trained in interdisciplinary scholarship to look at language, to look at rhetoric, I became fascinated. I was like, well, what did these documents say? How did these documents seduce these people? Imagine us today deciding collectively to give up the world that we know and completely start from scratch, start over, and want to create a new world that is completely foreign to us. And especially because so many people died for these documents, I felt that in my book, I had to really pay careful, close attention to these documents.
We're talking with Raul Coronado, Associate Professor of Ethnic Studies at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of A World Not to Come, A History of Latino Writing and Print Culture. When we come back, hundreds of years of history in Spanish Texas and Mexico before 1836 remain hidden in the dusty corners of history.
Does not fit the easy narrative story or the easy history that we have, that it should tell the story of the coming into being either of the great independent Mexican nation or the beginnings of Texas democracy.
More with Raul Coronado coming up on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The history of Texas, as many of us were taught in school, began with the heroes at the Alamo, who fought and died valiantly in 1836 against the Mexican forces led by General Santa Anna. The battle for Texas independence became famous around the world, spurred by the words, "Remember the Alamo." Raul Coronado is the author of A World Not to Come. He explains why no one seems to remember what happened before the Alamo, why no one talks about the 1813 Declaration of Independence by Bernardo Gutierrez de Lara.
I mean, that's probably one of the really effective political tool in Texas to begin with 1836. I mean, I think it's an incredibly important battle, but I think I would also insist on putting the 1836 battle within the context of what is going on throughout Mexico at that time, when all the other provinces throughout northern Mexico also wanted to gain independence or more autonomy from an authoritarian government. So Texas is not something that is unique. It's part of this larger history of what's going on in Mexico. Part of the reason why it's ignored is the nature of the way we think of history today. We study the past in order to understand who we are. And in the case of Texas, it's a story of how modern Texas came into being. But if we begin with Gutierrez de Lara, we begin with the War of Independence from Spain, but it's a war of independence that actually does not lead to, for example, the independence of the rest of Mexico. Texas was the buffer between the Spanish Empire in the Americas and the American nation. They were afraid that if Texas fell, it would be like a domino and the rest of Spanish America, the Spanish colonies would fall to independence. But the Texas Revolt, Gutierrez de Lara's revolt, does not lead to further wars. It does not lead to more independence. What it does lead to is the Spanish royal forces, as you were pointing out, the Battle of Medina, coming into Texas and taking San Antonio. And not only that, but unleashing horrific torture of the people of Texas. And this is one of the documents that I write about in my book. It's a devastating account by the women of San Antonio who describe themselves as revolutionaries and as Republican women, Tejanas, who say that they write this account of what happened to them so that what they fought for will not be forgotten. And it's a document from 1813. These women write about how they were forced to live in a jail. Many of them suffocate to death. Their children are forced to be homeless or out in the streets while the mothers are in jail. And they're forced to make tortillas for the Spanish soldiers. And they're tortured. They talk about being sexually violated, raped. Many of them are killed. And they write this history so that it's not forgotten. But unfortunately, it was forgotten. And it's forgotten because those acts do not lead to the creation of a nation state. It does not fit the easy narrative story or the easy history that we have, that it should tell the story of the coming into being either of the great independent Mexican nation or the beginnings of Texas democracy. I would say that that's part of it. The other part is Texas's own very tortured racial history of Anglos versus Mexicans. Part of it that's just a racial history, that dominant history sees it as having to begin with the acts by Anglo-Americans, and anything done by Tejanos is seen as not important, as not contributing to the actual establishment of a democratic nation in Texas.
Well, going back to that document you were talking about that described the torture of these women, that, from what I understand, is only one of two documents discovered written by women at the time, correct?
Yes.
So not only was there a Mexican, Spanish, Anglo bias, there was a gender one as well.
Oh, most definitely. This document is fascinating because it's from 1813, and a couple of historians have referred to this document. It's, as you said, the earliest document that I've been able to find written by Tejanas. Unfortunately, it's a tragic history that the earliest one that I've been able to find describes the horrific experiences that they underwent, but they want to describe them in the context of their proud, defiant participation in what they describe as the Republican War of Independence, where they want to establish a democratic republic. So it's a beautiful document. It's a devastating document. But unfortunately, it's baffling to me that the historians who write about this just also gloss over it really quickly, but they don't talk at all about the fact that they were tortured and raped.
And what's interesting is towards the end of that chapter, it reads here, the women who were not able to escape, they spent 54 days in captivity. And then the document reads, however, after they were freed, no one in San Antonio would acknowledge them, even here in the heart of their own patria. So again, no memorial, no signage exists to memorialize these women who were tortured. But yet this document exists. You are able to bring it to the surface to just sort of, I guess, shed another beam of light on many of the incidents that directly affected the people of San Antonio, the Tejanos who lived here during this tumultuous period.
No, definitely. I mean, I think that's the devastating part of this history is it's all forgotten. And that's the reason for the title of the book, A World Not to Come. And each of the instances, whether it's independence from Spain, whether it's the imagined ways in which Tejanos can participate in democracy, and many of them were in favor of independence from Mexico in 1836. They didn't see themselves as betraying Mexico. They saw themselves as fulfilling the dream of Republican democratic forms of government. But unfortunately, what happens is that the racial ideologies that Anglos bring in, and many of them are coming in from the South who have their own racial ideologies that were shaped in the context of slavery and have their own very embedded, deep, deep ideas about race and colorism, begin to see Tejanos just as if they were Mexicanos. That is, they don't make a distinction between the Tejanos who wanted independence and who fought for independence and the Mexicanos that they were battling. And so as a result, what ends up happening is that there is a political culture, a political ideology that develops that allows violence against Tejanos. So newspapers, for example, that had existed in San Antonio in the 1850s, Spanish language newspapers, and those newspapers are important to be able to cultivate a sense of belonging amongst the readership, to be informed, to know about politics, And so when you don't have that, then you don't have the basis for Tejanos to be able to participate in politics, to be able to participate in business. And it becomes much more flattened in the sense of the people who were elite become and move down in terms of their own socioeconomic position. So it's a devastating story for many of them. It becomes impossible for Tejanos to be able to combat the very entrenched racism that is unfolding in Texas.
We've been talking with Raul Coronado, Associate Professor of Ethnic Studies at the University of California, Berkeley, and author of A World Not to Come, A History of Latino Writing and Print Culture. Much more of our talk is online, including a conversation about the Jesus, Maria, y José document that helped Bernardo Gutierrez de Lara in his pursuit of Texas independence in 1813. And we also chat about why Coronado didn't originally intend on writing about Spanish print culture. Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show under the Programs tab on our website, tpr.org, and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Lauren Terrazas. Our executive producer is Dan Katz, and our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.